The latest fundraising numbers are in the Senate race. A pair of vice presidents stump for Hoosier candidates. That plus a new Donnelly ad that borrows from Reagan and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 19th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly headed into the final stretch of Indiana's contentious U.S. Senate race with more than $2.5 million more in his campaign war chest than Republican challenger Mike Braun. Joe Donnelly set a personal fundraising record in 2018's third quarter. He took in about $3 million. Mike Braun trumped him, posting a $5.5 million fundraising period. But more than $2 million of Braun's haul was from checks the Republican wrote to himself. That's after he said he planned not to spend his own money on the campaign after the May primary. Donnelly collected more than $700,000 in small-dollar contributions last quarter to Braun's $400,000. Candidates often boast about small-dollar giving as a sign of grassroots support. What do Braun's big loans to himself say about the state of the race? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, Leslie Weidenbenner, managing editor of the Indianapolis Business Journal, and Nikki Kelly, statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, should Joe Donnelly be worried about how much Braun is pumping into his own campaign here?
You know, sometimes it is just what it appears. He's obviously having trouble raising money for his campaign, and he can write a check. We knew he could write a check. I mean, he's become a multimillionaire on the backs of paying his employees so poorly and then canceling their health insurance and importing all those goods from China and wherever else he doesn't remember where they came from. There's money is never going to be an issue in this campaign. I mean, you can't turn on the television without being inundated with 50 of these in sequence. So money is not an issue at all. But I think it does speak to the level of Joe Donnelly's support, that a lot of those contributions came in small donations from people as opposed to million-dollar loans, which Mike Braun makes to himself. And by the way, also pays back, because he started paying back what he put into winning the primary the first time around.
Money is definitely not an issue in this race.
We agree on that. This race is not going to come down to money on either side. They're well-funded, and whether it's from this account or that account, all the groups that are spending money here, it comes down to the message, and it comes down to voters deciding whether or not they want to send someone who they can rely on to consistently vote for Hoosier conservative values and support the president's agenda.
Which
Joe Donnelly does not, right? And so the bottom line is the message is Joe Donnelly voted no on Brett Kavanaugh. He voted no on tax cuts. He voted yes on Obamacare. And so he's out there pretending. He is the great pretender right now, pretending to be a Republican. But at the end of the day, when it really matters, when there's a close vote, he votes with leftist Democrats, and that is what is going to be the deciding factor.
I want to ask about the loans.
So one of the things I think is really interesting is if you are a donor trying to make decisions about who you're going to give money to, why would you give money to Mike Braun? You know he's got the money to do whatever he needs to do in his campaign. Most people don't have enough money to just spread it around to everybody. You're going to make a different strategic decision. And so I think it's kind of hard to judge how much money he might have been able to raise if everyone didn't already know that he could spend whatever he needed to spend.
Yeah, because these loans, if you look at them, it wasn't one check he wrote to himself. It was several different checks that he wrote over a couple of months in the quarter. So you can't really read too much in as you might otherwise in a more normal
race. I think
they
probably have internal, you know, goals as they go along the quarter, and if they wouldn't hit it, he would kind of fill it in each time they didn't hit a goal. I mean, I do think it's a concern, and the big concern is if the fundraising problems also translate into voting problems.
Well, and you're right in that a person who can fund their own campaign, someone who is seen as that incredibly wealthy, is that turns off some people, whether that's appropriate or not. There, you know, some people will view him as a very successful person that plays in his favor. There are a lot of people who also will view him as out of touch with their interests. And so it can really play both ways.
Which he is, because, for example, he says he's in favor of taking care of pre-existing conditions, but he wants to repeal the one law that covers pre-existing conditions. He is out of touch with Hoosiers.
And he has committed that for the future. I don't even know why you continue to make that up.
He asked for Obamacare to be repealed.
Mike Brun came out of a competitive three-way primary where any one of our candidates, whoever was going to win, was going to have a zero in their bank account at the end of that primary.
And they were all going to be
stockpiling millions of dollars.
And
so we had millions to catch up in a very short period of time. And so he made his own investment, which is smart.
All right. At the same time that former Vice President Joe Biden campaigned for Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly in Northwest Indiana, current Vice President and former Governor Mike Pence told a room full of Republicans in Indianapolis why they should elect Donnelly's GOP opponent, Mike Braun.
Much of Vice President Pence's speech focused on the Trump administration and its efforts, but Pence said what drew him home to Indiana was the state's crucial U.S. Senate race between Joe Donnelly and Mike Braun.
And really, a vote for Joe Donnelly is a vote to turn the United States Senate into the center of resistance in Washington, D.C.
In Hammond, former Vice President Joe Biden stumped for the other Joe Donnelly.
Joe understands that it's not weakness to reach across the aisle and reach a compromise without giving up any of your principles.
The Donnelly rally also featured a surprise, an endorsement of the Hoosier senator by Pacers star and former Indiana University standout Victor Oladipo.
Jennifer Hollowell, have Pacers fans become Donnelly backers after that?
They wish. We all root for the Pacers, and we're all super excited about what Oladipo has brought to this team and to the state in terms of excitement about basketball. But at the end of the day, celebrity earned endorsements are mostly about earned media attention. I'm a little surprised why they did it in Northwest Indiana. But all that being said, there's star power on both sides of this race, and I was at the event with the vice president. Republicans are energized. I mean, they had several events, and all of these things just serve to fire up the troops to get out there and do the work here in these last couple of weeks, knock on doors, make phone calls, be motivated. And so I certainly don't hold it against them. Everyone has their right to pick their candidate.
Do you think something like a Victor Oladipo endorsement really makes much of a ripple?
Moves the needle that much? I think who the endorsement comes from does matter, okay? And I think Victor Oladipo, in the short time he's been with the Pacers, has really endeared himself to people in this community because of the work he's doing. He's not just a great basketball player. He also wants to contribute to the community and to the state and to the nation and to use his celebrity status in a way that he thinks help people who need help, and to stand forward and say, you can't cut Social Security, you can't cut Medicare, there are people that rely on it. And I think that's to his credit. I've had some experience with him and the things that he's done, and I think he's a great role model. I really do. And when you look at role models, when you have a Donald Trump endorsement, how many people stand up and say, I want my child to grow up like that man? Okay? But on the Victor Oladipo front, there are, I am sure, a number of parents who would say, I hope my child can grow up like that young man has. So I think it has some value.
It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to make voting decisions based on that.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
election
true.
Comes
so,
down to what direction
they're gonna, they're going to consider.
I don't think Victor Oladipo is changing votes out here, but it's about energy.
The point is that it is about energy, and a celebrity endorsement doesn't hurt at all. It can only help. Now, how much can be debated? I do agree with Jen, though, that I'm surprised that they did two big endorsements in one night and didn't spread it out and do maybe Biden
up
in Northwest Indiana and then Victor Oladipo.
But he has
the campaign he has a schedule, and the campaign actually said that he reached out to them when he heard Joe Biden was going to be there.
Right.
Now, they could have, it's possible they could have talked him into doing something else, but apparently he wanted to be at this event. I do think it's interesting, though, you know, showing up at one event is not enough to really move voters, but it's also not even enough really to energize people. Now, if you start seeing him show up in campaign ads, or if you see him go
Donald
on the...
Trump would say differently due to Bobby Knight.
Well, that's probably true, but I, you know, then that's where you could really make a big difference.
Yeah. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will Pacers star Victor Oladipo's endorsement of Joe Donnelly make an impact in the Senate race? A yes or B, no. Last week's question, will there be any fallout for Speaker Brian Bosma from allegations of intimidation and adultery in an Indy Star report? 62% say yes, 38% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Joe Donnelly has a new campaign ad this week that's raised some eyebrows on both sides of the aisle.
The ad continues a theme of Donnelly's throughout the campaign. He's not beholden to either party. This particular campaign spot makes that point rather directly about Democrats.
The radical left wants to eliminate ICE.
I support ICE and funding President Trump's border wall.
The ad also decries a so-called socialist takeover of health care, with Donnelly saying, over my dead body, to Medicare for all. Republicans quickly slam the ad as a sign of desperation, and they point out that Bernie Sanders, a leading proponent of Medicare for all, rallied in Bloomington this week for Indiana Democratic congressional candidate Liz Watson.
Leslie Weidenbender, if you didn't know which party Joe Donnelly is from, what would this ad tell you?
Oh, I would really believe that he was a Republican, and I can't see why it's frustrating to both sides. I mean, for Republicans, it has to be frustrating, because if you're a Republican who's just now making up your mind and you see that ad, it's very compelling for conservatives. And if you're a Democrat watching this ad, I'm sure it's extremely frustrating, because, yes, they want to get Joe Donnelly elected, but they'd really like to get Joe Donnelly elected doing the kinds of things they want to do.
We've talked a lot on the show over this race about Joe Donnelly and how he has to try and find where that line is. And we've talked about some weeks where he seems to go much further to the right and then he's back on the left. And this one seems a little further to the right than we've seen him so far.
Yeah, I mean, he is threading the needle as close as he possibly can. I think he chose a few topics that he thought he could move completely right on and try to grab those independent voters, especially in central Indiana, and see if that can put him over the top.
Republicans said this reeks of desperation, that going this hard right, this late stage in the game, shows that Joe Donnelly is really worried about the outcome. Is that what this says? I like when you laugh at my question.
That's what they hope. You know, look, this is who Joe Donnelly is. Joe Donnelly has been more conservative than a typical Democrat since the day he was elected to the House. He's always done this. And he's always done what he thinks is best for Hoosiers. And that's the difference between him and Mike Braun. Mike Braun wants to go and say, rubber stamp, rubber stamp, rubber stamp. He doesn't want to do anything else. I mean, when he's talking about, he talks about being a fiscal conservative. Well, they're exploding the deficit with that tax increase. And now you have McConnell up there saying the only way to get the deficit back in line is to cut Medicare and cut Social Security. So you're going to lower taxes for the rich, and you're going to cut benefits for people who rely on Medicare and Social Security. Joe Donnelly would never allow that, okay? And there are lines he does not cross. He thinks pre-existing conditions have to be covered. And he went with Obamacare to make sure that Hoosiers were covered. So there are things that he won't do that are very important to him ideologically, and there are things that he and I would disagree on. And that's fine. That's what Hoosiers want. They want checks and balances. They don't want rubber stamps.
Leslie made a point I want to ask you about, which is if you haven't decided who you're going to vote for right now, you probably aren't super-duper engaged in the race up till now. So if you're tuning into the race fairly late and see that ad on television and you're fairly conservative, is that appealing to you?
Well, unless you don't watch television, you have had to see all the messages before this one.
That's
so
true.
I understand, you know, maybe you don't decide until late, but in this kind of environment, you've been seeing his ads all year long. And it's absurd. I mean, I really feel like he jumped the shark this week, and this seems like a completely
jumped
different ad campaign.
Shark.
It's very different, very different than his brand. And I do think it's desperate. I mean, it is not at all what Joe Donnelly has appeared to look like. It looks like it is a Republican primary ad. You know, we talk about how Republicans run to the right in the primary and then run to the middle, and Joe Donnelly is like, been running to the left and voting to the left, and now all of a sudden he's running as far to the right at the end as he can.
I don't even think it's exactly 62% of the time. But here's the issue. He went with Trump 62% of the time.
I'm sure you're happy about that. Every time it matters.
But is that the left?
Every time it's a vote that counts, he votes against Republicans.
Against the tax increase,
that is
he did
issue.
Vote against
We don't need him on
to
easy
provide
votes.
Health care.
We need him on hard
it.
Votes, on close votes.
Oh,
we need
I
him
see.
On Kavanaugh, on tax cuts.
We don't need
against
Kavanaugh.
Against Obamacare. And that's what
we don't
have.
We don't need Kavanaugh.
But what these ads prove this week is that he will literally say anything to get elected. She said there's a line he won't cross. I think this has just proven that he will cross any line if that's what will get him reelected.
Well, Mike Braun doesn't see a line. He doesn't see anything except whatever he's supposed to do that Trump tells him.
I think what this ad comes down to is not really even about the substance of what he's saying. Most of what he's saying, you could have guessed about him. It's the tone.
It's
all about the tone.
That's what stuck out
and
to
the
me.
Exact words he used rather than the positions
and
he took.
And part of that, the tone is not him, right? And now all of a sudden
the
he's for funding the wall, and he's your party's
like
leader.
Right, and we're proud of it.
And
I'm
so
sure
you're for
contrast
funding the wall.
To yours.
A panel of lawmakers wants to give Department of Child Services caseworkers more time to begin and complete investigations into child abuse, but that same panel this week also pulled back from recommendations that would have guaranteed foster parents a voice in court.
Current law requires DCS workers to complete investigations within 30 days. DCS wants that to be 45, which a study committee unanimously backed. Chief Justice Loretta Rush said it would complicate court deadlines, but DCS says the change could improve workflow with the courts. Another recommended change would allow caseworkers up to 2 or even 4 hours to begin an investigation if a child is in imminent danger. Current law puts it at 1 hour. The study committee also considered a recommendation to require judges to give foster parents a hearing if they request a role in a child welfare case. DCS stresses it's working with foster parents and the courts to improve the process, and lawmakers say that's good enough for now.
Nikki Kelly, the spotlight on DCS has been here for pretty much all of 2018. And the work here is, we should say, is far from over, obviously, because you have the actual legislative session now where these recommendations might play out. But at this step in the process, should Hoosiers be satisfied with the study committee's output on DCS?
I think the study committee had several meetings that were very substantive, and they got into real minute details that affect those people and the workers and the children and the parents. So I think everyone should be happy with it. That doesn't mean they solved every problem, but they advanced a lot of discussion. And in the end, the rubber's going to meet the road on the money that lawmakers provide and the internal changes in the agency.
A lot of, I sat through every single one of these meetings. A lot of the discussion for a lot of the time was about stuff that affects caseworkers, the things I talked about with how long to complete or to begin and complete these investigations, that sort of thing. But foster parents were the ones who came out in person and said, we have all of these huge problems. And there weren't really a lot of specific recommendations for them.
The truth is, you're not going to solve this problem in one sweep. The problems at DCS are large. And it's not just problems at DCS in Indiana. These issues exist across the country. And as soon as you kind of tackle one part of it, there's always something else there. There is no doubt that there will be more attention paid to foster parents in this process, but that is definitely not what the focus was here in this study committee. But you can bet that those parents are going to have some things to say as the legislative session moves forward.
Yeah, so is this, so if you were grading the performance so far, it's a big old incomplete because we have to see what session brings?
I think that we're making progress, but there is a lot to do. There will be a lot of bills put forward. There will be a lot of debates about how much money to spend on caseworkers and where in different parts of DCS. And look, these are really difficult issues, and I have a lot of respect for the folks in the administration and legislators who have been committed to this. I'm worried about the foster parent decision, at least at this point. I mean, I hope that that continues because it's hard enough to get folks to be foster parents in Indiana, and every caseworker isn't perfect, and we need, I think, more voices than fewer than less in this discussion to make sure that we're doing what we can for kids. So I hope that that's a discussion that continues.
One thing that there was a lot of debate about, maybe the specific number you put on the hours to begin the investigation, but the general consensus was we want to give them more time to start and more time to finish these investigations. If that does, that probably helps caseworkers, but does it look very good?
Look, I think the problem, I think Nikki's identified the problem here. A large part of it is money. Are we going to put the resources in to get the job done to protect the children? The second part of that is to change the orientation. Reunification of the family should not be the only goal. The primary goal should be protection of children. And I think we have it exactly backwards, because reunification sometimes puts those children at risk. And I think we need to have a more definite approach that says the child comes first, and the safety of the child has to be paramount above everything else.
Going back to your question, though, Brandon, I do think that is an interesting thing, because you've had all of these folks who have really been into the details, and they think that these caseworkers need a little more time. But you're right. It doesn't quite sound right.
Yeah.
Like, if you're someone looking from the outside and evaluating what they're doing, it doesn't quite sound right that they get more time to evaluate when a child is in imminent danger. Although I think it's worth pointing out that we're still talking about 2 hours.
Yeah, and I think the key thing here also is that they have such high turnover in DCS caseworkers, and this was an example of something that they couldn't physically meet in the majority of the state. So why make them feel like a failure mm-hmm. every time?
Yeah.
Well, put enough caseworkers in there and reduce the level
Well,
of
some, even
clients.
If you have enough caseworkers, yeah, if you're more than an hour away from
right.
a hospital,
right.
then yeah.
there's
well, that.
Yeah,
you there's,
that's
that.
Right in
there's
different
that.
Parts of the state. Well, Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill wants the U.S. Supreme Court to rule on a lawsuit over a 2016 anti-abortion law in what would likely be the first abortion case heard by the court since Justice Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed. A federal judge struck it down last year, and the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed that decision earlier this year. Attorney General Curtis Hill wants the Supreme Court to weigh in. He says the fetal characteristic abortion ban guards against discrimination, and he argues the state has the right to require fetal remains to be treated with dignity. The courts have so far rejected those arguments. Many anti-abortion advocates believe the new conservative balance on the Supreme Court, with the addition of Brett Kavanaugh, could swing cases like these in their favor.
And Delaney, could Indiana's be the case that starts to undo abortion protections, as some hope?
Well, that's why Brett Kavanaugh was put on the U.S. Supreme Court. But I actually don't think this will be the case. I think the wounds from the Kavanaugh process of appointment are so raw that if they were to do something like this and take this case immediately, there would be an uproar in this country that would be unprecedented. So I think they'll pass on this one and wait for another opportunity for Brett Kavanaugh to overturn Roe v. Wade.
I'll ask you the same question.
I don't know whether they'll address it or not. I certainly think that the Attorney General is well within his rights to pursue this. That is part of his job, and it is the Supreme Court's job to decide whether they take it or not and make that decision. I don't personally agree with everything that was in that legislation, but the Attorney General is doing his job.
This is not one that, I mean, I guess they could write a, if they did take it and if they rule on it, they could write the opinion whichever the way they want. But there's been a call in Indiana and other places to pass a total abortion ban. And so far, legislative leaders have said, well, there's no point. Is there now a point to doing something
sure,
like that?
Sure, absolutely. There is some point. But I think that the court is far more likely to take up some smaller movement in restricting abortion than they are to take up an entire abortion ban. Frankly, I'm not sure this would necessarily be the case that they would want to take up, because I think it probably raises a lot of other issues that are kind of unrelated to the basics of restricting abortion. And so, but I would not expect the first case they take up related to abortion to be a total ban.
Yeah, and I have to agree. I don't think the Supreme Court, I mean, they've never been one that leaps outside their lane to take a small regulation over here and say, oh, we're going to, you know, get rid of all, you know, we're going to ban abortion nationwide. But the fact is that if they slowly take little cases like this, what you might have is a de facto ban without having one in,
you already
know,
have
specifically.
That in some places. There are many, many counties where there are none available. You know, you have to travel hours and hours and hours.
Including
in Indiana. So they've already done that. The question is how far they go. I just don't think they go that far this soon.
Is there, let me put it this way. I don't think,
a lot of Hoosiers have a problem with the sort of abortion bills that the General Assembly passed, or at least it hasn't shown up in the ballot box that way. But if they did do something like this, does the sentiment change among the voters?
This bill, I mean, I don't think anybody urges that you have abortions based on the sex or the race of the child.
Or of a child.
Or well, the child with disabilities is a tougher question, because when you get those, there are certain syndromes that you can identify in utero where the child is going to live a very short life in intense pain. And, you know, it is hard for many of us who are not in favor of mass abortions to say that that child has to be born that way. And those are tougher questions, I think.
There are other parts of this law that I really think many people, even people who oppose abortion, would sort of have issues with, too, in terms of burying.
And cremating the remains.
Yeah, I think that is not going to sit well with people in general.
All right, well, that's Indiana's Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, Leslie Weidenbender of the Indianapolis Business Journal, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.